जया राधा माधवा कुञ्जाबिहारी गोपीजनवल्लभा गिरिवरदारी यशोधा नन्दना व्रज जनरञ्जना जामनचिरावनचारी जयं विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकचर्य Ashutarushata Shri Shri Maharaj Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Raja Granta Shrima Bhagavatam Ki All glories to the Samadavadis All glories to the Samadavadis All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga Om Agyanta Mirandasya Gyanajana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dati Swabhadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyarevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 6, Text 14. Aho Nuvamsho Yashasavadatta Praya Vrito Yatrapuman Puranaha Kritavatara Purusha Saadhyash Chachara Dharmam Yada Karma Hetum Aho Nuvamsho Yashasavadata Praya Vruto Yatrapuman Puranaha Kritavatara Purusha Saadhyash Chachara Dharmam Yada Karma Hetum Sarvadatta Mothers, Aho Nivamsa Yashasavarata Raya Vruto Yatrapaman Puranaha Krita Vatara Purusha Sarangash Nachara Dharmam Yatakana Hetum Kṛtāvatāra purushasya rādhyaś nacāra dharmam nitakanna Aho, O, Nu, indeed, Vamsha, the dynasty, Yashasa, with widespread fame, Avadāta, fully pure, Prayavrata, related to King Priyavrata, Yatra, wherein, Puman, the Supreme Person, Purana, the original, Krita Avatara, descended as an incarnation, Purusha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Saha, he, Adya, the original person. Chachara, executed. Dharmam, religious principles. Yat, from which, akarmahetum, the cause of the end of fruitive activities. Translation Purpur by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, Oh, what shall I say of the dynasty of Priyavrata, which is pure and very much celebrated? In that dynasty, the Supreme Person, the original personality of Godhead, descended as an incarnation and executed religious principles that could free one from the results of fruitive activity. Purport. There are many dynasties in human society wherein the Supreme Lord descends as an incarnation. Lord Krishna appeared in the Yadu dynasty, and Lord Ramchandra appeared in the Ikshvaku or Raghu dynasty. Similarly, Lord Rishabhadev appeared in the dynasty of King Priyavrata. All these dynasties are very famous, and of them, the dynasty of Priyavrata is most famous. That's in the purport, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So Chanaka Pandit, he tells this thing, that if you have a large forest and one tree is very fragrant, then the whole forest becomes glorified. Isn't it? Chanaka Pandit tells this point. And of course, the converse is also true. If there's one tree that has a really bad fragrance, then the whole forest becomes ridiculed or criticized. So similarly, in those dynasties where the Supreme Lord has personally manifested himself, then that whole dynasty becomes glorified. The same is true of persons who are non-different from the Supreme Lord, like the Lord's devotees. and the families or dynasties in which the Lord's devotees appear, then those dynasties also become glorified, or those lineages become glorified. Just as when there's a forest and one tree is extremely fragrant, then the whole forest becomes glorified. So it is a fact that if one is connected to such a dynasty or family lineage, then you become glorified by dint of that connection. Just like in that forest, all the trees may not have much fragrance to them, but because of that one tree, which is powerfully fragrant, the whole forest gets the credit just by being connected to that tree. So similarly, even one may be very ordinary personality, but because of having some connection to a family lineage in which the Supreme Lord, or one who is non-different from the Supreme Lord, like the Lord's devotees, has appeared, then that person becomes glorified just by dint of that connection. Of course, this is actually the fact. And on account of this understanding, particularly in India, there are certain family lineages who feel that they have a monopoly on spiritual life by dint of this particular philosophical point. Prabhupada speaks about the Nityananda Vamsa in the Nectar Instruction. Because it is a fact that these Goswami families, they can trace their lineages back to the associates of Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, or Advaitacharya, or Gadarha Pandit. And then they call this a parivar. Parivar means like coming in the line of. So Nityananda Parivar or the Gadarha Parivar, which means they descend in the line that is coming from Nityananda or Gadarhar or Advaitacharya and so on. And they usually have the term, I think, Goswami families. The Goswami families, if you go to Vrindavan, and many of the temples are managed by these Goswami families who can trace their lineage back to some great personality and Gaur-lila and so on. And so it is a fact that they are certainly glorified because of that connection. And Prabhupada makes that point in Nectar of Instruction Text 6 also. Not that we should be envious of them, that is actually true that they are glorious because of that connection. however, it has to be also pointed out that how did they get such a connection? How is it possible for them to have taken birth in such a lineage in which the Supreme Lord or his devotees have appeared, by which they have become glorified? We don't have control over the where we take birth. Otherwise, who would choose such bodies and so on? You know, it's obvious we don't have control over that. So how is it that someone can take birth in a lineage in which the Supreme Lord or his devotees has appeared, by which you also become glorified? And the answer is very simple. The answer is, it is the Supreme Lord's mercy that such a birth is made possible. Krishna speaks about this in the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 6 in response to Arjuna's question about what happens to the unsuccessful yogi who is, what is the word used? It's manasa something, manasa chala or something, I forget the language, whose mind has, he's taken up the spiritual life, but his mind has become weakened or disturbed, and therefore he's not successful. What is his position? Does he not become like a riven cloud with no place in any sphere? A riven cloud means like a part of a cloud that breaks off of a bigger cloud. And the bigger cloud goes away, and then there's no other small clouds around. He becomes like a non-entity in the sky. So won't I become like a non-entity if I take to spiritual life seriously? You know, leaving aside the material cultivation and taking to the spiritual. If I'm unsuccessful in the spiritual, and I've also didn't achieve success in the material, won't I become like a non-entity? What will be my position? This is a very valid question for persons who are interested in taking spiritual life more seriously. This question probably comes up a lot. Anyway, in response to that, Krishna speaks about the yogis status after a short time of practice and the yogi status after a long time of practice. Not going into the details, so the yogi status after a long time of practice, he takes birth in the family of transcendentalists, Krishna mentions, the family of Acharya families or Goswami families. So this process is not, of course, a mechanism, but is rather the Supreme Lord's kind consideration upon the endeavor of that transcendentalist. In other words, the same point that comes earlier in Bhagavad Gita, Neha Bikrama Nashosti Pratyavayo Nivedite Swapam Apyasya Dharmasya Tarete Marutobaya. So Krishna mentions that for those who take to this transcendental process, then for them there is no loss or diminution. This is meant to encourage a person to take up the process of yoga. So Krishna makes this point as a statement of encouragement. The idea is that in material affairs, unless you complete them all the way to the end, then you're considered a failure. And spiritual life is a long haul. So Krishna is saying, even if you don't complete it all the way to the end, there will be no loss for you. Similarly, in material affairs, if there is some discrepancy in your application, then you can receive a reverse effect or a negative effect. Prabhupada speaks about this in the Ishopanishad in describing karmakanda, that in karmakandic activities, unless they are executed flawlessly, then immediately become sinful activity. One discrepancy can lead to a very horrible result. The example can be given like in the sixth canto with the birth of Ritrasura. His father accidentally put like a long syllable instead of a short syllable, and he got another result, a result that he was not expecting. So that is the nature of material activity. But Krishna says, even if there's some discrepancy in your application of bhakti or the transcendental process, particularly devotional service to Krishna, then there will be no diminution. You won't receive a negative or reverse result. So Krishna speaks these words as encouragement. And furthermore, by doing this process of yoga, you'll be saved from the greatest fear. The greatest type of fear is described as continued existence in samsara, especially in the lower species of life. This is described as the great fear. So these are the three glories Krishna speaks of bhakti here, three glories he has spoken, to encourage us to take devotional service seriously. But this encouragement of Krishna is not like a mechanistic process. Just like because I've taken to yoga and so on, then this is automatically what is due to me. It is rather the Supreme Lord's kindness in considering the attempt of the jiva and trying to establish his relationship with him, with Krishna. So therefore, when Krishna says in chapter 6 that a person will take birth in the family of acharyas after a long time of practice, that is due to the Supreme Lord's mercy. So to take birth in such a lineage by which we become glorified is ultimately the Supreme Lord's mercy. And no one has monopoly on the mercy of the Lord, because the Lord is independent, Swarat, he's independent from all living entities and so on. So no one can claim false monopoly on the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So although it is certainly true that if you take birth in such a family, that birth is exalted, no doubt. And one should not criticize such persons on account of that. It may be, one may take a critical review of their particular activities, but their birth is certainly exalted and it should be acknowledged. But it is unfortunate that persons who have this exalted birth, they tend to, there's a tendency to think that I have a monopoly on the spiritual culture or monopoly on the mercy of the Supreme Lord. But they do not realize that just as they have taken that birth by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, so also some sinful living entities can be elevated to that position by the same mercy of the Supreme Lord. So Krishna speaks about this in Bhagavad Gita, right? What is that? Mamhi yo vyapashitya yepi shu papayonayaha shriya vaishatatashtujas tepi yanti param gitim. What is that? Well, Krishna says that anyone who takes shelter of him, vyapashritya,
If you take shelter of Krishna, Prabhupada imports also, or you take shelter of one who has taken shelter of Krishna, Prabhupada Kosta Bhagavatam there, then even if you are Papa Yoni, Papa Yoni means taking birth from a sinful womb, sinful birth you've taken. Then even if you are Papa Yoni, then some examples are given, Sri Avaisha Tathashudra. So we all make the list. No one should feel I'm being discriminated against. No, Krishna's not discriminating. Everyone made the list. Just by saying Papa Yoni, we all qualify as residents of Kali Yuga. So, Tepi Yanti Param Gatam, if you take shelter of me, or you take shelter of one who has taken shelter of me, Krishna says, then Tepi Yanti Param Gatam, then you will attain the highest destination. So by taking shelter of Krishna, even if one has sinful birth, by that mercy of Krishna, one is elevated to an exalted position. So whether one takes birth in the family of Goswamis, or one takes shelter of Krishna and is ascends to that platform by such surrender to Krishna, both are on the same platform, transcendentally speaking, by dint of the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So no one can claim monopoly on the mercy of God, which tends to happen, unfortunately. So Prabhupada speaks about it in NOI 6. NOI 6 is Drishtva Sobhava Janitara Vapusha Chadoshar Napakrita Tvam Iha Bhakta Janascha Pasya. Krishna, Rupa Goswami says that you should not take a critical view, material perspective on the devotee of the Lord. Napakrita Tvam Iha Bhakta Janascha Pasya. One who has taken shelter of Krishna, you should not see him from the material perspective. And what does a material perspective mean? Swabhava Janitar Vapu. Swabhava Janitar means his personality, his conditioned personality that he's acquired by dint of association with the modes of material nature. And Vapu means body. Swabhava Janitar Vapu. So we tend to criticize. To get over the Vapu is easier because even in the secular world, they consider that a very bad thing to criticize someone's Vapu, isn't it? Even in the secular world, they consider it a very bad thing. But to get over criticizing the conditioned personality is very difficult because we identify those persons with their conditioned mentality. So tendency is to criticize that Rupa Goswami says you should not do like that. So what is the purport that Prabhupada gives there? So some families have taken birth in these Goswami lines, and they see others are born taking Papa Yoni, their sinful birth. So they make criticism, and they become degraded. And then Prabhupada says, and similarly, those who have been elevated by taking shelter of the spiritual master, namely himself, they've been elevated to the Goswami position, then they become critical of these Goswami families, criticizing them. That is also incorrect. Both persons become degraded, and Prabhupada speaks about there should be no envy, no jealousy. I think Prabhupada used the word jealousy. There is no jealousy in this culture. Paramahamsa. Paramahamsa means one who's free from envy. Prabhupada speaks like this. So this has to be overcome. Generally, conditioned mentality is to think in this way. Outside of the Gaudiya Vaishnav context, even in the material world with other religious traditions, they feel that they too have the monopoly on spiritual life. Some cultures, they believe that they're the chosen race by God and that you can't even convert, if you lucked out and took birth in the chosen race, you lucked out. And if you didn't, I'm speechless, but, you're condemned. So that's one type of group thinks in that way. And another type of group thinks that, no, you're not barred, but you have to believe only in this way, and then you can be rescued. You can be rescued. That the Lord's mercy primarily descends only in this way. And if you consider that and take shelter of that, then you can be rescued. They think that they have a monopoly on the way the Lord expresses his mercy to the variety of conditioned souls. Actually, it is not a very fair proposition because the extent of the history of that particular tradition is very short within material time. You know, it's not like Vedic culture. No one can trace when Vedic culture exactly began. It's, you know, there's a huge debate about that. When, but some of these other cultures, particularly the Middle Eastern religions, they have their traceable history. So you mean to tell me that for this small strand of history where this faith has suddenly popped up, you know, that is the only and exclusive way in which the Lord expresses his mercy to the conditioned souls? And that if one doesn't consider that, then he gets, you know, a really horrible punishment, you know, eternal damnation. So this is the same conditioned mentality of the Goswami and these things. Same mentality. I have a monopoly on the mercy of the Lord, or I can understand how the Lord chooses to express his mercy to the variety of conditioned souls. That generally they'll say like this, everyone can't be right. Everyone can't be right. Only one person can be right, and it just so happens I'm that person. And if you accept me, then you can be elevated. If you accept what I say, not accept me, but you accept the tradition like that, then you'll be elevated. Otherwise, you know, eternal damnation. Like this, they're saying this thing. This is, but this means to constrict the way the Lord chooses to express his kindness to the variety of conditioned souls. The reason we tend to say that Krishna is the best nomenclature for describing the Supreme Lord is because it means all attractive. Whereas other names of the Lord, mentioned in other traditions, they only speak of certain qualities of the Lord. But different living entities will be attracted by different qualities of the Supreme Lord. So, you know, God may be almighty. That is certainly true. That is certainly correct. But everyone may not be attracted by that particular feature. So, but when you say Krishna, which means all attractive, that means he's the possessor of all qualities by which he can attract all living entities. Therefore, the name Krishna, we say it's the best nomenclature for the Supreme Lord. He is certainly, no one would disagree. Just don't use the word Krishna. Just say all attractive. They say, yo, yes, yes, yes. If you say Krishna, they become upset. So Krishna is all attractive. So he has unlimited qualities. And you'll discover, if you ever develop qualities yourself, you'll discover that the qualities, they manifest themselves in a variety of ways when interacting with this world or the people of this world. So it's not like you can put a rubber stamp on what a quality looks like. In fact, I should have did more meditation on this, but when Lord Chaitanya speaks about the 26 qualities of a devotee to Sanatana Goswami in chapter 22, he mentions that these qualities are actually inconceivable. They're actually transcendental. They cannot actually truly be conceived. But just to give you a little taste test, I'll explain some few qualities. He explains 26. So when the qualities are, these qualities is like a language, you know, we've heard it in this way. Qualities are like a language. So in a language, you combine various words in order to make meaningful expressions. It's not just like one word. There are many words, and then you combine them in very variegated ways to express different types of meaning. Just like when we were growing up, this word cold. Cold means like freezing, right? Like you're cold. And when we were growing up, the word cold meant something very cool. Like that was cold, you know. When you would say if something was like very cool, that was cold. Or the word raw. This is a lesson on Ebonics here. Ebonics means ghetto talk, improper language. The word raw, I don't know how many of you grew up this. The word raw means something like raw vegetables and so on. It has a certain context. But the word raw would be used to say something was very ecstatic. You know, when something like, if there was like a really ecstatic kirtan, you would say that kirtan was raw, you know. And of course, for maybe a cultured person from India, what do you mean raw? What is this raw? She said that was raw. What do you mean? What is raw? Raw, they can understand. But in a certain context, raw has a certain type of meaning. So anyway, language is like this. Language is very unique. In fact, I wonder, what is the modern scientific explanation of language? Just the variety of languages and so on. They're trying to create through artificial intelligence. Anyway, I don't get into that. But Siddharth, another Siddharth, I know about four or five Siddharths. Another Siddharth, he's also a computer scientist. He's doing artificial intelligence there in Michigan. He was telling me like this, just for the scientists to try to create language like a child, it is practically inconceivable. They don't know how to do. And to create a robot that can try to respond something like a kid, it was taking up the electricity of a whole city, of a whole small town, just so the kid can say like one or two words. So it's very, language itself is something very inconceivable. Anyway, so language is like this. You combine different words and different ways to express meaningful things to people. And those, the combination of way you use the words can change the whole meaning of things. So similarly, qualities are something like a language. They can be combined in variegated ways to make for meaningful exchanges with other living entities of this world. And the source of those qualities, of course, is Krishna. So Krishna has these unlimited qualities which work in a variegated way to express his kindness towards the living entities of this world. So it wouldn't be fair to assume that Krishna is restricted to only one form of expression of kindness to the living entities of this world. And if you don't consider that or take shelter of that, then you're totally condemned. So like this mentality is not good. Although it is certainly the case that the dynasty in which the Lord appears is glorified, and if you appear in connection to that dynasty, you become glorified, but you do not have monopoly on the mercy of the Lord. The Lord is unlimited and independent. So, and he shows his kindness to all the living entities in his own way, even the lower species of life. The other just final thing I'll say here is when the Lord descends into the dynasties, you will observe that most of his descents are in Kshatriya lines, Kshatriya descent. There's a reason for that also, because Krishna says in Gita, evam parampara praptam imam rajasyo vidu. He gives his knowledge to the Rajarishis, because in that position you have influence on over the whole society. And Krishna is very eager to see the conditioned souls become developed spiritually. So you observe that he mostly takes birth in Kshatriya families, Kshatriya lines. And for what purpose does he do that? To chara, it says here, chachara dharman yara karma hetun, to exemplify the principles of dharma which cause the end of fruit of activities, a karma hetun. And this is mercy. He descends in a way to show living entities how to put an end to their fruit of engagements. Like this. This is the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So when we're propagating, we're trying to expand the network of Krishna's mercy in the world. We should not falsely think that Krishna cannot act in any other way, and in this way become proud and envious and become degraded. Although it is true, by taking shelter of Krishna, we have become exalted. You know, we don't have any fragrance, just like those trees in the forest. We actually have no fragrance. We are mercy cases only. But because there's one tree is there which is very fragrant, we also become glorified, provided we remain in our position of shelter in Krishna and Krishna's devotee like that. So this is a point that I could pull out of this short purport. Hare Krishna. Yeah.
Thank you so much for your class. Something I was reading about last night and wondering, so Krishna's mercy is available to everyone. What's going on? Krishna's mercy is available to everyone, but we see that different living entities are endowed with different amounts of Krishna's mercy as evident through their behavior, through their life. So how does one become a better recipient of Krishna's mercy?
By becoming a pure devotee. That is the only short example. And Queen Kunti's prayers, I often mention this. Prabhupada talks about the four types of living entities that come to Krishna. And Krishna is prepared to give himself 100% to all the living entities. But some living entities come to Krishna because they want material remuneration. So although Krishna is prepared to give himself, when they get their material remuneration, they go away. Similarly, there are those who come to the Lord because they are distressed. So the Lord is ready to give himself also, but when their distress goes away, they also go away. This is a tendency. And similarly, there are those who come to the Supreme Lord because they are inquisitive. And when their queries are answered, then they also become, you know, mediocre. They go away. So although the Supreme Lord is prepared to give himself because of some impurity in the heart, Arto Jignasudartarti, Gani, even, because of some impurity in the heart, then they do not receive the full mercy. Then Prabhupada describes there also that in the pure devotee, he doesn't want anything from Krishna. So when Krishna says, I'll give you myself, they take it. So only by becoming pure, more and more purified, do we make ourselves greater recipients of mercy. Otherwise, our own material desires bar us from receiving. Like that. Yeah.
You were saying in chapter 6, Krishna is encouraging the living entities to take up devotional service. Because even if one fails to become completely successful in devotional service, you know, he rewards him. And you explained, you know, through his, it's his mercy that you take birth in such exalted families by his mercy. But I was thinking, you know, what Krishna says, if one takes up devotional service and isn't successful, then he'll go to the heavenly planets. But this doesn't seem like a... I mean, Prabhupada is always telling us, like, we don't want to go to the heavenly planets. So how much is it?
So 2 points on that regard. That going to the heavenly planets is after a short time of practice. Chaliti manasa. What is that? Give me Bhagavad Gita. This word is irritating my mind now. Not chanchala. It's something like that, though. Chalita manasa, something like this. And this verse is a very important verse of chapter 6. Why the yogi is not successful? Because his mind, isn't it? The rascal mind. Dushtamana, stupid mind. Rascal mind. So it was mentioned here. Yes, it's like verse 4. Arjuna has asked this question. Yeah, chalita manasa. My memory served me good. Chalita manasa, so their mind is wanting to enjoy material sense gratification. Although they're advancing in yoga, but the mind, due to not being at the yoga ruda stage, the advanced stage Krishna speaks about in chapter 6, so the mind is gets disturbed for desire for enjoyment. So the yogi, after a short time of practice, Krishna allows him to go to the heavenly regions and so on to exhaust that tendency for enjoyment. Just like if you get a lot of money, immediately the mind thinks of so many sinful things, isn't it? If you don't get rid of the money very quickly or use it, if you don't have a way you can properly engage that money, then suppose someone just gives you $5,000. Immediately the mind will think of, okay, give a little, 100, 200, give to the temple. And then the rest of it, you know, the mind immediately becomes in sinful mode. I have that experience, at least. I don't know if you have that experience. Certainly before devotional service, and even now, I'm sure, to that degree. But when that money is exhausted, then you can focus on Krishna. That's a crude example. So similarly, the many desires are there. Chalita manasa, so they are disturbing the yoga practice. Aprapya yoga samsidyam. He cannot achieve the perfection of yoga because of this. So go to the heavenly regions, get some enjoyment, and then take birth in Brahmin family or aristocratic families and carry on advancing after a short time of practice. But after a long time of practice, Krishna will make arrangement for him to take birth in the family of transcendentalists. That means the Hare Krishna movement. Because, of course, I don't know great details about the Goswami families, but I do know Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Thakur challenged a lot of these families because of their tendency to try to claim monopoly over Krishna's mercy or spiritual life and so on. And also, it may be observed that their activities are not always in line with the regulative principles of devotional service. Shruti Smriti Purana Adi Pancharatra Vidin Vina Akaintiki Harir Bhakti. It may appear like Akaintiki Bhakti, pure devotion, but it's not really in line with the conclusions of the Shastras. So to take birth nowadays in Kali Yuga, it means take birth in this Gaudiya Sampradaya. That is a very fortunate birth. Like that. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, but I'm just curious on, instead as we like associate with the modes of nature, then we're more influenced by those modes. So like the tendency to enjoy would increase. So how do we understand this as opposed to exhausting our
Even on the material platform, when you go to the heavenly regions, that enjoyment exhausts the piety. And then you come down to earth, isn't it? When you go and enjoy, just like that's the way karma works. When there is some sinful karma, when you suffer, that exhausts the account of sinful karma. And when you enjoy, that exhausts the account of pious karma. This is strictly on the material platform. The main consideration in the spiritual life is that there's transcendental knowledge. This is the different feature. So although a person is enjoying material life, there's transcendental knowledge that he also is possessing. So he's not able to act on that transcendental knowledge on account of conditioning. So Krishna speaks about this. I mentioned this verse many times. Jata shraddho makatasu nirvinna sarvakarmasu veda dukatmakam kaman parityage hi anishwara. Krishna mentions that in describing the beginning stages of pure devotional service. Krishna mentions that my devotee has awakened faith in my narrations. He's disgusted with material affairs, knowing that all material activities are sense gratification which lead to misery. He's trying to give that up also, parityage, but he's not able to do so completely because he's anishwara, because he's not fully in control. As you've just expressed, on account of association with the modes of nature, the modes are forcing his hand in material sense enjoyment. But he has knowledge now. That is a different feature from his pure conditioned life to his sadhaka life, is that now he has transcendental knowledge. So Krishna mentions, Jushamana Shatan Kaman, although sometimes he's engaged in sense gratification on account of being forced by the modes of material nature, he does repent that. Like he knows this is foolish activity. And it's kind of like getting it out of his system. By that engagement, it's getting out of his system. But the transcendental knowledge is still acting. It's still there. It may be somewhat covered on account of the modes of nature, but he's got it now. That is his great fortune. So through materialistic activities and then subsequently suffering, that can help the living entity to hell with this program. This is not going to work out. And then turn towards Krishna. There are many verses. Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st canto, 5th chapter, verse 19. Narada Muni speaks that for one who has once tasted rasa, what is that? Rasa graha. He is rasa graha. He's once tasted this happiness of spiritual life. He can never forget it. Even though he does some sinful activity, he can never forget it. Because Krishna's mercy won't allow him to forget. I often joke in this way how the mind is such a rascal that when you're in the temple doing nice engagement, the mind will think sinful things and agitate you. Oh, you can be doing this and that. Don't you remember when we were doing this and that and that and that? And then finally you feel frustrated, so you go out and do sinful activity. And then when you're doing sinful activity, the mind will say, hey, the devotee said this is not a good thing. Why are you doing like this? You're going to suffer. Like, and that way the mind will not let you be peaceful for 1 second also. Whether you do sinful activity or devotional activity, mind is like that. In the beginning stages, it is like that rascal. But the difference is you have transcendental knowledge. So Narada Muni says, Rasagra, once he has tasted the happiness of spiritual life, he'll never forget that. And that is also Krishna's mercy. Mattashmitir Ganama Pohanam Cha. Krishna will not allow him to forget that. Because he is eager to see the living entity come to him. So he's trying to enjoy without Krishna. Okay, get it out of your system, go and enjoy. But don't you remember this? Remember that? Especially when you're suffering. And then Krishna might give you mercy, a merciful remembrance of the kindness of devotees, etc. So the knowledge is there, although covered. So you might go and enjoy to exhaust that tendency. Sometimes that happens. There's so many histories. It happens to many devotees. Historically, it's not like a new thing. People think like fall down is like a feature of the Kali Yuga. But it's not just a feature of the Kali Yuga. Anyone's read the Bhagavatam, it's like a normal thing. Fall down is not really that extraordinary. Because we're in Maya. We're in illusion. So we shouldn't really be that astonished by it. All you have to do is read the Bhagavatam. You can see it's an historical event. Devotees do fall down. It happens. But the difference is they don't forget Krishna. And that is the mercy of Krishna. Just like Bharat Maharaj, he took body of a deer, but Krishna did not allow him to forget him. He allowed him to remember him and remember his nonsense of attachment to a deer. And then he, next birth, went and achieved the perfection. So like this. You want to enjoy? You really, like a kid, childish person? Okay, go and enjoy. Just like Prabhupada tells a story of wanting to put his finger in the fan. So the fan is spinning. And Prabhupada wants to put his finger when he was a young boy. So uncle or someone, I don't remember exactly. He said, I want to put my finger. Uncle said, no, you cannot do it. You'll suffer. But he was so eager to do it. So what his father did was, father maybe or uncle, unplugged the fan. And then, okay, now put your finger, you know. When the fan was slowed down a little bit, then he put his finger and, you know, hurt himself. Then he learned, this is a nonsense thing. So like that, we're childish, foolish thing we want to do. Go after illicit sex, go after intoxication. We heard so many times, but we, no, I want to see. Probably Delhi Kaladu. Delhi Kaladu, this, I guess it's a special ladu from Delhi. Apparently that when you don't have it, you are lusting after it. Oh, I wish I had it. And when you get it, you also lament. Both stages are lamentation. Because you enjoy it, and either your taste is not satisfied, so you want another, so you're lamenting for that reason. Or if you don't have it, you're lamenting, oh, I wish I can have. So like that childish person's, oh, what is it like? Oh, Krishna, okay, go and enjoy. Thank you. And we run after our sense gratification, and then we suffer, and then we run back to Krishna by the mercy of Krishna. Like that. Okay, anything else? Yeah.
Regarding falling down, and then Krishna promised Mahatotra Ati Vayat that he will protect the devotee. By.
Yes.
But what happened when, with Nama Parada, especially like Guru Ninda and offending devotees?
Yeah, well, we should make a distinction between offenses and sinful activity. There is a distinction. I think it is Gaura Govinda Maharaj who describes how sinful activity is compared to the accumulation of dust. So even if a lot of dust is accumulated, it can be easily removed. Whereas offenses are compared to a thunderbolt striking a mountain. So when a thunderbolt strikes a mountain, the impression left is practically indelible. So there is a difference between sinful engagement and offenses. But even if there's offenses, it is not that everything is completely lost. Although it can be covered over deeply for a long period of time. Vishwanathacharya talks about this in Sixth Canto commentaries. In the cases of offenses, one can get a very bad result. Shunned from the community of devotees, take birth in Rakshasa family, you know, like really bad results can come from aparadha. But whatever he has been able to do up until that point is not completely lost. But it may be covered over for many, many, many lifetimes. That's what Vishwanathacharya Thakur mentioned something. I can't find it. It's in the sixth canto, I believe. It will be covered over for many lifetimes, but it is not lost. And through, if one is fortunate to recognize his offenses in this life, then he can take shelter of Harinam and take shelter of Vaishnava, seeking their forgiveness for his offenses. And if he's not fortunate enough to do so, then you know, it's going to be a long wait before he comes back to the association of devotees and so on. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat particularly, Lord Chaitanya is pretty heavy about the results, about his opinion on offenses is extremely strict. So much so that even if you, he makes a point that anyone who offends a devote, my servant, then I consider such a person to be cutting my body into pieces, which is pretty heavy. And then he goes, well, who's your servant? And he says, all the living entities in the whole Jagat are my servants. You know, like real heavy. I remember when I read that, I'm like, man, I can't even let it out on the non-devotees. My frustration on the non-devotees. Lord Chaitanya speaks this thing that he considered all the jivas in the whole Jagat to be his servant. So and then he goes on to say, so anyone who blasphemes anyone, then he will be shunned from my services and so on. He gives Lord Chaitanya, and that's just one spot. All over the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Mahaprabhu has very rigid opinion about offenses. One may ask a question, as Jai Keshava asked a question, which I thought was an interesting question. He says, due to being conditioned, naturally we're going to be inclined to make offenses. And at the same time, the reaction for offenses are so heavy. So this seems a little bit unfair. He posed this question to many senior devotees. How the Lord can be so strict on offenses when he knows we are conditioned, therefore we will be almost forced to make offenses. And anyway, this question was asked by many devotees, and none other than Vishwakarma Prabhu, our cook. He made a nice point in this regard. I don't know, I think he told like this, someone had asked him, but it's something like this is what I recall, something like the voltage on a train, you know, it says high voltage. So if you touch it, you'll be electrocuted and die. That is actually a compassionate thing to tell you that, isn't it? It is actually a compassionate thing. High voltage, so many watts are there. If you touch it, you'll be electrocuted, you will die. So it's the sign is very strict, but it's compassionate to inform you. So also Lord Chaitanya is being very strict in order to inform the jivas to abandon their tendency for offenses. Just like if you see that sign, high voltage, you will not do. You'll become very frightened. Just like I remember my brother and I, when we were young, when we would see the train tracks, and we would kind of like want to throw things on it to see what would happen. And we didn't have any knowledge. We just thought maybe something would like zap or something. But we knew not to go too close because you can die. No. So similarly, Lord Chaitanya holds a very strict opinion about offenses. But it's not that all is lost. But one's advancement can be curtailed for lifetimes. And also, quite interestingly enough, in the Bhakti Sandarbha, it is mentioned that the reason that Bart got attached to a deer was due to offenses. And Bart Maharaj is on the platform of Bhakti. So it's mentioned in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that the result of offenses to the holy name of Krishna will continue to threaten a person all the way up to the stages of prema. You can be suffering some reactions to the nam aparad, which is inclusive of Vaishnava aparad and so on. So in this way, we hear about aparad because it has a very dangerous result. It is not the same as sinful activity. But all is not lost. It is not that the Lord is not merciful also by having such a rigid opinion. Because if you are to exist in a spiritual reality, then you must give up aparad. Everyone there is Vaishnava. If you don't give it up, everywhere you look, there will be problem for you. So he maintains strict opinion to make us fit for spiritual existence. Like that.
I thought Bart Maharaj became attached to the deer because I was reading the story, and the deer is always fearful that the lion or something's going to come and get it. So Bart, you know, had that perception. Well, let me take care of the deer because you know, we're trying to relieve the sufferings of other living entities.
Yes.
No.
That was what initially got him started. But anyway, the reference point that I'm speaking is from the Bhakti Sandarbha by Jiva Goswami. I read it a long time ago. I can show you the reference. But quoting a verse from the fifth canto Bhagavatam, Jiva Goswami points out that it was due to aparad that Bharat Maharaj became attached to a deer.
Overly attached.
Okay, overly attached. I don't know what's the difference between the two, attached or overly attached, because even the smallest attachment can get you another body. So the attached or attached is a problem.
You can say that they're parts and parcel of Krishna, and you know, Prabhupada said we're supposed to be stewards for the animals.
Yes, that is true.
We're supposed to, you know, we're not.
But that's
supposed
a lot different than being attached to them.
Oh, well, I thought we were attached to all living entities. You know.
No, of course not.
I mean, you know, we're attached because they're part and parcel of Krishna.
We're attached to Krishna.
Yeah.
And as a result, our affection for Krishna expands to the whole jagat, but yeah. Attachment is to Krishna. Prabhupada gives the example, that's like a mother loves her child. So when she sees her child's shoes, she feels great affection when she sees the shoes. But her affection is not for the shoes. Her affection is for her child. But because the shoes share their relationship to her child, so also her affection comes out when she sees the shoes. So also there, it's attachment to Krishna, an affection for Krishna. And because of that, it spreads to all the living entities. Prabhupada's language in the Nectar of Devotion is that it's the one switch that turns on all the lights. You know, just this, the Krishna switch that turns on all the lights. So it's attachment to Krishna. Attachment to other living entities, unless they're, you know, bhaktas, is a very dangerous thing.
Well, they are in a progressive state, but there's nothing we really can do to, you know, really stop their suffering because they're on the karmic cycle.
Yeah, that's right. So that was Bharat Maharaj's mistake then. That he was, because of his Kshatriya nature, I will be the shelter for this living entity. But ultimately, you cannot be the shelter even for yourself. Only shelter is Krishna. There is no other shelter. So that was his mistake in that sense. That I will give shelter to this living entity. And as a result of that mentality, he apparently lost his Krishna consciousness. Now there's a picture of him doing his yajna and looking at the deer, wasn't even paying attention. On account of thinking, I'm going to be the shelter of living entities. So we can be the shelter of no one. We can only encourage people to take shelter of Krishna. And that's how we become shelters for them also.
Hare
but
Krishna.
Not independently. Yeah, that's my answer.
Thank you.
Okay, so, Acharya Nisha. Acharya Nisha Prabhu wants to say something.
Thank you, Prabhu. I just had a question. Prabhupada says that actually God has no name, but he has...
God has no name.
Yeah. He said God has no name, that's a fact, but he's known by his activities and qualities. And then he explains that Krishna means all attractive. Have you read that before?
I think so. But generally, such statements mean that God has no material name. Just like it is said that God has no form. So there's a verse, this is quoted by Advaitacharya, I forget where it's mentioned, that when in the Upanishadic language, when it describes the Lord in impersonal ways, it is to indicate that his features are actually beyond the material realm. So that description is not a description of the absolute truth being impersonal in its final feature, but to rather say that it is freed from all material contamination. So Krishna has no name means he has no material name. But certainly he has so many names in relationship to his activities in the spiritual world. And by chanting those names of Krishna, you know, Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha, and so on, one can get the goal of life. So he has a name, certainly he has a name. He has a name, he has a form, he has qualities, he has activities, but they're all free from material contamination. Therefore, to say that they're nirguna, like nirguna, saguna and nirguna, Prabhupada speaks about. Nirguna means no qualities, but God has no material qualities. Now that he has no qualities. Otherwise, you can imagine that type of conclusion can lead to a lot of problems. God has no qualities. So then on the perfectional platform, I also have no qualities. This is not the correct understanding. And his qualities are transcendental. His rupa, his nam, his lila, like that. That's my understanding. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.